Chapter 74. The Master of Three. Saw Cam helped his sister Sarina arrange Jen's lifeless body on a white granite boulder in the heart of the Black Forest, where the old trees grew tall and round. Night had fallen, and the fireflies attended them as they waited for their father and Aldemar to come counsel together, the last of the Milim Eri.
"Let us remove the armour and clothes," Sarina said, "and wash the body. He deserves that service, at least, for what part he played."
Together, brother and sister went about their work, discarding the ruined armour and torn clothing, fetching water from a pool formed by a clear flowing brook. With a tender touch they washed the blood away from the cuts and the gaping hole of the crossbow bolt. When finished, Sarina arranged his hair and limbs to afford him dignity, while Sore willed the leafy vines of the forest to shroud his nakedness, leaving his still face uncovered. Fireflies flew about his head, their yellow glow on his pallid skin lending his cheek a false colour of life. A cool summer breeze teased the mighty pines about them, the moons clear in the sky above them. Two ravens crossed the sky and then fluttered to a clear space at the foot of the boulder. As avian feet touched the earth, the birds transformed into Aldemar and their father, Norus Cam. Like all of their race, their father was built powerfully. While he enjoyed the eternal youth of those of powerful blood, the white hair and the faded blue irises of his eyes aged him. He had the wise and troubled countenance of one who had seen the passage of centuries and the death of three gods. He and Aldemar stared at the body for a moment before Norris spoke.
"I see that you bear the fruit of your meddling, my children. I have watched this drama unfold with great interest and with great sorrow. Even I began to hope that my advice to you to remove yourselves from the affairs of men would be proved wrong. But woe has always followed whatever attempts we have made to right Mikik's wrongs. It had been better if our strength could have veiled Triss forever than to have Kihol suffer this shameful fate. But we are weak now, and all our devices have failed. It is time for us to enter our rest."
"Not so, father," Saw disagreed. "It is true that Mikik has turned our carefully crafted prophecy and its prepared actors against us, and will now accomplish his design. Yes, it is a pity that the race of men is so weak and we are so few, but you must see that there was in this man something more. As in the time we elevated Aldred and Nickmere and helped him save many peoples. Jen proved that the race of men can be noble and strong," Sarina joined in, Norris listening expressionlessly. "Mikik owned his body, but for one created without a soul, he was indeed powerful. Oddly, our guiding hand had little to do with what he accomplished in the end. His love for the woman we chose and for her mother guided all his actions. If only the Ha'ulric could have loved the world or the woman as much, then this might have ended well." Norris nodded.
"It is as I have always said. To make a man a king is to make a man a ruin."
"It would not have ruined this one," Sarina said, indicating Jen. "He possessed the power of knowledge and the firm purpose of love. He despised fame. He craved no authority."
Norris grasped his daughter's shoulder.
"Perhaps, Sarina, but he is dead now. And from what I saw of his heart, it was a small tent that only admitted a few. For Jen to have succeeded in his purpose, he would need to have enough room to love the whole world. He would have failed, too, I am afraid."
"But he could love, and purely," Sarina argued. "If one has the ability to love just one other selflessly, then to love more just requires a little stretching. He could have done it. The Shalane did it."
"Her love was not for the whole world,"
Aldemar contradicted, surprising them all.
"I saw into her mind and her heart. She was willing to sacrifice all for the love of a few, Jen among them."
Norris raised his hand.
"It is enough, Sarina. We could not have anticipated this. Mikik is too clever. However far along the path we think we are, he has walked farther and left snares for us to fall into. There is nothing more to do. He will glean what power he can from their diluted blood until he can silence the beating heart of Elder Luri Mora forever, and Kihol will wither and dry like the autumn leaf fallen from its home. The Shalane's blood still has the power to kill him, Saur said. Eldaloth's blood runs in her veins. A weapon could be crafted. We do not craft the implements of war with blood magic as he did, Norris said, voice rising. Eldaloth forbade it, and only Uldemar among us knows its secrets from his former master. Creating the Shalane and the Ha'ulric using Eldaloth's blood was blasphemy enough. I only permitted it to appease you.
I know, Father, that you see no hope, Serena said, voice soft and placating. But if we are to pass into our rest, then let us at least use what power is in our blood to make such a man as never has been known upon the face of Kihol. If the world is meant for its end, there can be no harm in this one last, desperate attempt to thwart our ancient enemy.
Just what exactly do you propose? Norris asked, face concerned.
Here in this bower we have masters of Min, Duum, and Triss. In our blood flows the pure sensibility to the power of those moons. Never before has a human been a master of three. Uldemar can use his knowledge to put within him our blood and the blood of immortality. Let us fashion this one last hope for men. If all is doomed to fail, as you say, Norris, then whatever harm you think he could do is irrelevant.
And so then is the attempt, he retorted. Can you do this, Uldemar?
I can, Norris, Uldemar answered. It is the same magic I used to help them create the players of the prophecy during the time of my mourning.
Norris shook his head.
We saw what happened when we gave the power of Triss to the humans during the Mykkikian Wars. I regret that choice to this day.
But it saved them, Saur added. Yes, it caused division and destruction, but in the end they survived.
They survived because our people exhausted themselves shrouding Triss's light to weaken Mykkik's power, Norris contradicted. Were there enough of us now, I would do it again.
But there aren't, Father, Serena said. Besides, with no soul, Jen can never have progeny. The magic will stay with him and him alone for eternity, or until he decides it is time to end his existence. If there is the slightest chance, we must try. There is no need for us to spill our blood uselessly on the ground when it might offer some hope, however slight. If you withhold, Father, then Saur and I will contribute our essence to this task. But a master of three, where Triss is the third, has a greater chance than only a master of two. Please, Father, humour your children this one last time. Let this man carry some part of us, whether it be to this world's ending or to its salvation. Let him be the legacy of our race.
Norris paced around the body, face calm and eyes upon the countenance of the youth on whom Saur and Serena had placed such heavy expectations. Patiently his children waited. Uldemar stood beside them with a look of solidarity. 4 hours they waited as Norris paced, the night waning and the stars dimming as dawn approached. At length he stopped at the head of the boulder.
"Uncover him, Saur," Norris commanded.
With a word the enveloping leaves retreated.
If he is to be a king and a new creature, then his body must be clean and strong.
Norris stretched forth his hand, and Serena stepped forward.
Do not undo the branding on the center of his chest. It is his connection to the Shalane.
Norris nodded and concentrated, and the multitude of scars and wounds that crisscrossed Jen's body faded, his skin renewing and undoing the marring of Torbrand's cruel instruction.
The virtue of our blood will provide all else he requires, Norris said. It will be a majesty that the humans will not see, but they will feel it about him. What knowledge of Triss you left with him will remain, but we must imbue him with the arts of Min and Duam. Sarina, Saw, bestow the knowledge upon Aldemar, and he can pass it to Jen when life again courses through his veins.
Aldemar placed his hands on his companions' heads, the deep knowledge of Saw and Sarina passing into his mind. The ever-lightening sky brought a chorus of birdsong, another brilliant summer morning waiting to be born.
"Let us be about it and march to our ending,"
Norris said as Aldemar finished.
"I am weary of the world and its trouble, and I long for peace."
Norris concentrated and, with the power of Triss, created within the boulder a depression around Jen's still body to hold the blood they now prepared to spill. As one, they placed their arms inside the new bowl, and Norris used Triss to undo the skin and the walls of the veins in their wrists. Golden blood spilled freely as Aldemar looked on, face doleful. Sarina and Saw smiled at each other in a last farewell. As Norris weakened, he turned to Aldemar.
"You will be the last of our kind, old friend. Do not be afraid to come to us. Your heart and your conscience are clean. It is because of you that there was any chance at all."
Aldemar nodded and watched as his companions gradually slumped over the side of the boulder, closed their eyes, and then fell to the ground. The tears that he had long cried for the horror of Eldaloth's death returned, brought forth by a new pang for the loss of his friends and the end of his race. Breathing deeply, he arranged Saw, Sarina, and Norris respectfully among the trees, wishing each a farewell. And then he returned to the boulder where Jen's body waited. The warm golden blood did not quite cover him, and Aldemar used his hand to ladle it over the corpse until his skin was stained with its hue. Drawing upon the knowledge of his former master, Aldemar thrust his hand into the pool of blood, its combined power staggering to his perception. He spoke the dark words, the blood seeping into Jen's skin, destroying the old blood and filling Jen's veins and body. Pulling in the remaining virtue, he gave Jen life, his heart reigniting and his chest rising and falling just as dawn broke fully into the sky. The blood now spent and gone, Jen stirred within the hollow of the boulder. Before his eyes could flutter open, Aldemar used the power of Min magic to put Jen into a sleep, allowing him the opportunity to infuse the young man's mind with the learning that Saw and Sarina had shared with him. Once done, Aldemar looked upon the creature he had created, remembering his encounter with the Shalane. There was good in the race of men, and he hoped that Jen reborn would retain the love and devotion he once had, and not succumb to the pride and vanity that so often plagued his race.
"I give you one last gift," Aldemar said. "If you are to be our legacy, then it is wisdom that the legacy is passed on to be as immortal as you."
Aldemar gave his gift, a gift Norris did not intend. He blessed Jen with a soul. Lifeless, Aldemar fell to the forest floor with his companions, never to rise again. Jen sat upright, the memory of the savage crossbow bolt loosed upon him shocking him awake. He had known that he was too far gone to even attempt to avoid the attack, and awaited the terminal blow that would finally end his tempestuous life. The impact had come, his body thrown back with the stunning force of the missile. Surely it had killed him. But instead of the sandy cliffs of Butcher's Gap, the dark bark of pine trees surrounded him, and by the position of the sun to his east, he saw that morning had come instead of dusk. Weak light provided scant illumination, but he found he could see quite well. The unnatural scoop in the boulder where he lay and his nakedness brought him up short, his mind struggling to fabricate an explanation for his whereabouts. But when he regarded his body and came into his mind, his amazement stunned him. Only his branding to the Shalane remained, the rest of his grotesque scars having disappeared altogether, his skin a healthy, burnished hue that seemed just a shade darker than he remembered. He could sense the Shalane in the distance only a few scant hours from where he was. She had survived. Alive with renewed purpose, he clambered out of the boulder to find his second shock. 4 dead Millimeri, including those who had concealed Mekik's lessons on Triss magic from him. The 2 others he did not recognize. He would have to sort the mystery out later. He had to reach the Shalane, for he didn't doubt that Mekik would pursue her relentlessly until he unmade her just as he had done to her pathetic husband on the Bridge of Echo Hold. As Jen cast about for something to wear, he felt the familiar awareness of Triss magic. The Millimeri had returned it to him. Reaching within, he sought to use its power to fashion raiment for himself. As he turned inward, he found more. 2 other forces awaited his command, and he found the knowledge of the phrases and gestures needed to use them at the tip of his tongue. Reeling under the weight of his new knowledge, it became clear. The Millimeri had changed and empowered him, but to what end? Tentatively, he used the magic of Duum to change his face and disguise himself, growing a close-cropped beard and lengthening his hair so it hung about his shoulders. Pleased with the results, he drew upon Triss to fashion the simple leather garb of a woodsman about himself, including a wide-brimmed hat to further conceal his face. Casting one last look at the strange bower and his stranger benefactors, he turned westward toward where he felt the Shalane waited, feeling through the Imtith, her exhaustion, and the dry, itching discomfort of her skin. If she had fled into the wood, then they were indeed desperate. Calling on Duum again, he fortified his body and ran, with the fleet foot of Maewyn's father, the thicker trees giving way to thin ones that clumped more tightly together the farther he ran from the bower. The joys of Duum magic infused him with the agility and speed of a deer, dodging and jumping through the tangle with such alacrity that he couldn't help but smile within himself. He had run for an hour when he caught sight of a solitary figure making her way through the forest in his direction. Upon seeing him, she stopped and leaned against a tree to rest. Maewyn. Jen rejoiced and ran to her. As he approached, she squinted at him, unsure for a moment of who he was. At last, the glimmer of recognition bloomed on his face, and she smiled one of her rare smiles. "It is you," she said in Elvish. "But it is not you." "I'm not sure what I am either," he answered in kind, "but I am the Jen you knew. I still bear the brand of the Shalane, and know she is not far from here. Is she in danger?" "Grave. I'll tell you while we run. Let's see if you are as good as you once were."
They pressed forward against the cloying tangle of branches and underbrush with as much celerity as they could manage, Maewyn's tale souring his mood the more she told. Mekik had played them all masterfully, and whatever the Dark God had in mind was clearly within his reach. He wanted the Shalane, sending Aethon for her, which evidenced there was some purpose left that Mekik had not yet fulfilled.
"So I do not believe it will be wise for you to return as Jen," she said, stopping as they approached. "Your appearance is so different now that if you keep your distance and talk little, you can pass for someone else. You need a new name, something humble and nondescript. Call me Imos. I will be a woodsman you met on your excursions searching for Eldaluri Mora. Explain that I am an expert in the healing arts, and if I can help the fallen men, I will. We must keep my existence secret. If Mekik learns that I am alive, I will be a liability to the Shalane, not to mention that most of the men may not trust me as Jen, no matter what Mirel tried to tell them, or how different I look."
"I agree," Maewyn said, "but it cannot last. Jen, you must see that you have been given great gifts for a greater purpose than just protecting the Shalane. Think on it. But we must hurry. I fear the Uyumak will again come for us with nightfall, and it already approaches midday."
Jen nodded and used Triss magic to conjure up a phony bag of herbal remedies to mask his use of Duum magic's healing power. They ran forward again, emerging into the clearing, to find that most of the fallen men had gone, Jen sensing the Shalane on the other side of the glade within the confines of the forest. Some few corpses remained, and he and Maewyn inspected them, finding gaping wounds and blood around them as if something had burrowed out of their insides.
"This does not bode well," Maewyn intoned gravely. "They were all unconscious when I left. Let's see if the soldiers can move. We must leave before the beetles of the Uyumak arrive again. Remember, keep your hat low and talk little."
They crossed the clear brook at the centre of the glade, passing some men filling water skins, all bearing bloody bandages on their extremities, all wan and shaky.
Crossing into the wood on the other side, they found General Harband and Lord Kildan leaning against the tree trunks, a tired Ethris nearby. They all gave Jen the once-over as he approached, but no flicker of recognition sparked in their troubled eyes, their attention turning to Maywan.
"Did the stupor pass?"
she asked, noting the bandages on Lord Kildan and General Harband.
"Oh, it passed," General Harband answered grumpily. "After we all burst a beetle or two out of those bites they gave us last night. Mikkik's beard, I'm not a fainting man, but the little baby beast is damn near crippled the entire army before scurrying away into the woods toward the rest of them. I will not be used as a breeding cow for beetles. I won't."
"At least the Uyumak didn't come for us," Lord Kildan said. "I had feared that the beetles were meant to weaken us."
"The Uyumak may fear the creatures," Maywan said. "They ceased their speech when the beetles neared. They only do that for stealth, to hide."
"Whatever it is, the beetles' emergence claimed the lives of some of the weaker men," Ethris explained. "Most survived, but the wounds are painful and infected. I healed what I could, but there are many more that could use your herb craft, Maywan, though there are likely too many for you to help."
"I will try," she said. "This is Amos, a man I met in my travels. He knows herb craft as well, and he has some small skill with dua magic to aid us."
Ethris raised his eyebrows.
"That is welcome news indeed."
"We'll get to work immediately," Maywan said. "We need to get this army moving.
I'll start near the center of the camp." To Jen, she said, "Go to the north and start anywhere." Surreptitiously, Jen angled his way near the chalane, seeing Volney, Dacen, and Jeren surrounding her as she slept beneath a small lean-to. He had to resist the urge to run and embrace his old friends, though they obviously needed assistance, and instead he went to the first man he found upon the ground, a Rugothian soldier who appeared half out of his wits. As General Harband had described, the beetle bites had indeed turned to beetle nurseries, and as the young had burst forth, they left ragged craters in their victims that were grotesque and painful. Jen sprinkled the innocuous herbs on the soldier's wound and, while rebandaging it, used the gift of dua magic to heal it enough to take away the sting of the pain. After treating the first few men, he realized the enormity of the task. There were simply too many men scattered throughout the woods, and he would run out of strength long before even half of them were well. He could also use Triss to knit the flesh back together, but that wouldn't last him long either. He tried to perform triage to treat the most severe cases, but time seemed to run on the fleetest of feet. The afternoon sun was angling down at a hurried pace. And then he felt it. The slight tickling in his mind. The touch upon his thoughts was dark. He stood and turned toward the glade, wondering what it portended. It felt similar to what he had experienced with Gamadron, but he did not feel it as strongly. A powerful mind approached, something not human that was bent on destruction. He reached out to it with min magic, gesturing the proper patterns instinctively. When the contact came, he staggered, nearly stumbling into a tangle of branches.
"Who dares to see my mind?"
the ancient evil clicked in odd tones.
"You think to challenge the might and will of Hecadron? Come, and let my children feast upon your blood and use your flesh as their womb. From those that stand against me, I gather might."
Jen gasped and broke contact. Hecadron. Wrath of blood.